first reading is from the second book of Maccabees. You may or may not be familiar with the book of Maccabees. It's if you were not raised Catholic or if not, you know, not conversant in some of the books of the Old Testament, many people don't even know what Maccabees is. In fact, the Protestant Bibles don't have it because Martin Luther decided in all his wisdom, that he was going to cut it out because he didn't like the fact that it referred to things that were obviously pointing to purgatory and things that were, he found uncomfortable. So he decided not to include them, along with a few other books as well. So if you seem to disagree at some point with someone as to how many books are in the Old Testament, they're actually this and others are included in the Old Testament, whereas some do not see them. So the book of Maccabees is something that many people are unfamiliar with. But it's a chronicle of a very important part of Jewish history that occurred about 150 years before the birth of Jesus. To give a little bit of a background to this kind of harrowing account of the execution of these seven brothers, the background, of course, is that several years before, Alexander the Great from Macedonia, north of Greece, had conquered all of the known world, pretty much all of the known civilized world around the Mediterranean realm, all the way over to India. He had conquered in his short lifetime. He was only 30-something when he died. And then his kingdom got carved up into four sections. But it was a Greek culture. He spread the culture of the Greek pantheon that is their gods and their customs and all of those things. They thought they had something to offer, I guess, and so they were. But they tried to inflict it on everybody. They tried to enforce it on cultures that did not understand it. And one of those cultures, of course, was the Jewish people. And so that's what we find during this time. They called them the Hellenizers. Hellenists were, you know, the Greeks. The Greeks that wanted to spread Greek culture. They were trying to force the Jewish people into observing religious practices that were against their own faith. And in this particular case, they're trying to get this family to eat pork, which is against the Mosaic law, because it was an unclean animal. It was unclean, you were not supposed to eat it, it would render you unable to worship properly, they thought, and according to the law that God had given them at that time. So they're forcing them to do this or else. And that's what they did with the Jews at this particular time in history. If they would not sacrifice to the Greek gods, if they would not deny their own faith, then they were tortured and put to death by the hundreds and thousands. And so that's what we find today. Now, the book of Maccabees is a story about all this oppression and then the revolt that happens. This revolt is staged by this man who is of a priestly line and his sons. The chief of those sons was Judas. His name was Judas. And he was called Judas Maccabeus, or Judas the Hammer was his name. That was his nickname, the Hammer. He was a valiant warrior, mighty on the battlefield, brilliant tactician, and fearless. And very zealous for the law of God. So they staged a revolt and threw off for a time these Greek oppressors and restored the observance of the law and all of those things. Great book to read. I encourage you to sit down and read it. It's actually entertaining to read. Lots of blood and gore and battles and all of that stuff. So if you guys enjoy that, have at it. I do. So anyway, here's the background for this story. Also, during this time, of course, most Jews believed in the resurrection of the body. They believed in the resurrection of the dead to new life and eternal life. And that is what these young men are testifying to today in their martyrdom. One of them particularly, whenever he's threatened with death, they order him to stick out his tongue, presumably to carve it out of his face. And he not only does that, but then he holds his hands out as well, and he says, "Take these. The Lord gave them to me. I have every hope that he will give them back to me again." It's a bold statement of faith for a young man to make. And all of his brothers, all the way down to the last, do this. All of them. While their mother is watching. Now, if you can imagine, ladies, if you have children or grandchildren, if you can imagine watching them cruelly put to death in front of your eyes, would you be able to stand there and take it? You know, and it also calls to mind the image of our Blessed Mother who sat there and watched her son die and took it. You know, that's an amazing testimony of faith in God as well. Now, this faith, this trust that they had in God, it didn't come out of a vacuum. They didn't just wake up one day and decide, "I'm going to die for God. I'm going to die for these laws that we hold and we believe in." It happened that groundwork was laid far, far earlier than that. Their mother, maybe their grandparents, were laying that foundation of faith in their hearts from the time they were small, so that whenever this time came for them to testify to God, they were able to do it, and to do it gladly. They deeply trusted God. And so we have a great example of faith in these young men and their mother. The point, of course, is also that's why we pass on the faith to our young people. That's why we do it, and that's why we should do it. Because we all know that life ain't easy. And whenever the storms come, oftentimes those storms seek to blow us off the course of our faith. And if we don't have that foundation and trust in God and devotion to Him, then we are going to get blown off course and maybe never find the path again. And we don't want that for our children and our grandchildren. We should not. Just the opposite. And that they'd have the strength of character and conviction to stay with what it is that they know is right. And that's what we... Now, how do you get there? It's given to us by our faith, by our family, by our faith community. And it's nourished through prayer. It's nourished through prayer. We just concluded the 40 hours devotion last night with the vigil mass last night, and it was a beautiful, beautiful celebration. I want to thank everyone who took the time to spend some personal prayer with Jesus, just you and He, in the Blessed Sacrament. And if you have not done that, I encourage you to do it. I think I heard many accounts and observed many people who were moved to tears during this time of adoration with the Lord. And I don't know what was going on in them. I don't need to know. But something good was happening. Something profound was happening. And I just want to encourage all of us to realize, again, that door is always open. Always. You know, and sometimes there's no better time and place to pray than to come in here late at night when it's dark and it's just you and the tabernacle and that red lamp glowing in front of you. You know, it's a beautiful experience, opportunity to experience intimacy with God. So if you've got something weighing on your heart, bring it to Him. You know, if you've got something to thank Him for, bring it to Him. And it's in tapping into that life of faith that we're going to have the deeper certitude that God is with us, especially in the hard times. To look briefly at our gospel, Jesus is debating with the Sadducees. The Sadducees were a sect of Judaism in Jesus' time that did not believe in the resurrection. They did not believe in the afterlife. And in contrast to the Pharisees, who did. They didn't believe in the afterlife. They were sad, you see. Ha ha ha, it's a joke. That's about the only joke that I know biblically, so that's all I got. But they were trying to back Jesus into a corner here in this particular scene. And they come up with this kind of ridiculous concocted story about seven brothers who married the same woman, and then when they're all dead, like, who is she married to? Who is she married to? And they're expecting some sort of definitive answer from Jesus. Well, they get one, but not the one they expect, as usual. He says, the children of this age marry and remarry, but those who are worthy to attain to the coming age and to the resurrection of the dead, are they neither marry nor are given in marriage. He said, they can no longer die, for they are like angels. They are the children of God because they are the ones who will rise. Now, he's testifying to, first of all, the bodily resurrection. So at the end of time, our bodies and souls will be reunited. We will have a body. We will worship and praise God in and through our bodies. We won't be disembodied spirits. That's not a Christian belief. Bodily resurrection is a Christian belief, which is one of the reasons, again, I think I mentioned before, why cremation is allowed but not encouraged, because, you know, we respect the body and realize that we are going to be reunited with it someday, and it's going to be perfected and raised up. But also, there's something else indicated here. I was talking about the necessity of prayer with God and tapping into a deep relationship with Him. What Jesus is saying here is not that marriage is not important, not that it's not essential in some ways, but as an expression of intimacy, in the worldly sense, there's nothing that we can come up with that's probably any more compelling than the image of a husband and a wife that are truly united in everything. However, what Jesus is saying is that in the life to come, that unity, even at its best here on earth, doesn't hold a candle to what the intimacy is going to be between every single soul and the Lord. Which is why prayer, the life of prayer, is not just some nice window dressing for Christians to do. It is absolutely essential, because that is the goal of our existence in heaven. If we do not have intimacy with God in the life of prayer, we will not know Him in heaven. And that's the purpose of our existence, is to be perfectly united with Him, period. So, how do we weather the storms of life? How do we work toward this goal of heaven, which is intimate union with God? Well, we do it through the life of prayer and devotion, okay? We try to live it in our own lives. We try to pass it on to our children. And we have the confidence that the Lord will raise us up on the last day, we who are faithful, we who strive to get to know Him in this life, will know Him perfectly in the next.